As I went to go in the front door, I suddenly realised I'd driven to work that day, and I'd walked all the way home. So I then walked back again to get the car. Today, I want to talk about something that we might have heard hundreds of times, but it's easy to forget. And so this isn't going to be rocket science. No sermon is that I give, I know. But I just thought it'd be good to have a reminder this morning. And so I'm going to read some famous words to us from Romans chapter 12, just two verses, 1 and 2. And as I said, it can be easy to forget this stuff. And so this is a reminder. So I don't know if it's coming up. Am I in the way here for your... Just wait for the technical skills of Andy. No pressure, Andy. Romans 12, 1 to 2. Poor old Andy's got to do this with everybody looking at him this morning. Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry. Apparently, it's not as simple as we thought. So let me read it to you. And you can imagine the words coming up on the screen. Or follow it on your phone or an actual Bible if you've got one. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. It's entitled, A Living Sacrifice. And this is what it says. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Well, anyone been watching the Olympics the last few weeks? Anyone in here? I'm guessing that most of you have all become experts in the field of curling now. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't put the TV on without curling being on. And it's been great, didn't it? We won the gold medal this morning. I say we, obviously, the female team. I'm not sure we have anything to do with it at all. But we finally won a gold, which is great news. And we've all become experts in curling, haven't we? And I don't know if it's just me, but I really... Has anyone actually ever done curling? No. No, I really want to have a go. Anyway, Steve's got his hair. I just love how they push off, don't they? And they're all like this, and they like give it a little spin. The end, I just think I'd be really good at curling. And then there's like all of this, you know, as they're sweeping it.
And how do you score it?
Well, you just get it in the circle thing at the end, don't you? It's easy. It looks easy, doesn't it? Anyone can do it, I reckon. But one of the things I do love, though, is that they have all the mics on, don't they? So you can hear the conversations that they're having, but they send this stone down. And then you get the shouting. Well, our team, I think I could understand them, but not if they're all Scottish. I have no idea what they're saying. I think they're saying sweep, aren't they? Or sweep harder. Anyway, they are like shouting. And this thing's not even travelling that fast. It's just like going down. I love it. Oh, I'd love to see that, Chris. You like that in the bowl? That's another spot I'd like to play. There's just not as much shouting in it. Go on!
Nobody's sweeping.
No one's sweeping the glass, are they? No, you're right. All the car
running around like this.
Brilliant, though. I love it. I love all of that shouting at this stone. to get it to do what you want it to do. When we come to this, these verses, Paul is writing to a church in Rome, hence why it's called Romans, and he starts off this little part of his book with the word therefore. And there's a little rule when you're reading the Bible: if you see the word therefore, you should always ask the question, what is it there for? And it's there because Paul is making a link between what he said in chapter 11 and what he's going on to say in chapter 12. And just before this, he is talking about God's mercy. And he follows it up in chapter 12 by saying, therefore, and as you will see, he talks about God's mercy again. So that's why the therefore is there. It's linking what was happening before to what he is saying now. But so he says, therefore, in view of God's mercy, this is what I am encouraging you to do. This is how we respond. And he says, I urge you. It's like that urging these stones down to the end of the thing. They're shouting at it to encourage the sweepers to either sweep harder or less, or, you know, if the line is good. And Paul is saying, I urge you, and it's more than just this strong encouragement. It's like, I want to push you forwards in your Christian faith. It's like he's shouting, come on, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. I urge you, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters. That's everyone. That's all of us. It's one of the things they don't tend to tell you when you become a Christian, is that you suddenly inherit a whole load of brothers and sisters, whether you want to or not. Therefore, I urge you, Paul says, brothers and sisters, that's everyone, in view of God's mercy. You see, in view of this idea that we can see God's mercy, we can see what he has done for us. And certainly as Paul was writing to these Christians in Rome, they could already, he'd already written about all that God had done in terms of his mercy. He'd written about the fact that we had been justified by Christ, that although we were due the penalty of sin, Christ took our penalty of sin. That we had been adopted into God's family as his children. That God had given us his Holy Spirit in order to be able to live out our faith. He had promised to help us in our times of affliction and trouble and anxiety and pain. You see, all of these things are God's mercy towards us. So Paul is saying, in view, as you can see all of this stuff and much more, give yourself. These athletes that we've been perhaps watching over the last few weeks, they didn't just turn up at Beijing and think, do you know what, I think I'll give the luge a try. They didn't just think, oh, I think I might just sit on this tray and go, you know, 80 miles per hour down this course. For years, months and years, these athletes had given themselves to their pursuit, hadn't they? They hadn't. You can't half-heartedly do anything at the elite kind of end of sport without having to give yourself wholly to it. They're amazing, aren't they, these athletes? Every day, isn't it? It's every day doing the same thing. I was watching like the skiing half pipe thing. I don't know what they're called. Some of the events all look the same to me, but now that is something I reckon I could at least get a curling stone down to the end. I don't think I could drop in on some skis or on a snowboard. Considering I've never skied or snowboarded, I think I'd be in a bit of trouble. And certainly that accident. Did you see that British guy? Wow, got up and walked away. If you haven't seen it, our British guy had a what looked like a horrible accident, but he was fine. I say British, he's American, but he's become represented in Britain. Anyway, we'll take what we can get, won't we, if we can win. Didn't work out this time, but these athletes, they give themselves to it, even to the extent where they might get hurt. But this is the pursuit for them. Anyone heard of Amar Bulati? Kind of glad you haven't, really, because a bit of a sub thing to, you know, weird thing to know that. But this is a man who has held his arm up in the air for 45 years.
That's a lot of praise and worship.
Unfortunately, he's worshipping the wrong God. He became, I forget what it is now, but it was a particular type of Hindu. And he felt like he needed to leave his family and all his kids and moved and sort of become a Hindu monk. And because he was finding it hard to leave his old life behind, he decided to hold his arm up in the air and not put it down. And apparently 45 years later, he is still holding his arm up in the air. Now we can't put it down because, you know, it's just stuck in that position now. What a weird thing to do. I mean, you're all looking at me like going,
why?
Why? Exactly why? I guess for him, he felt it was, from what I've read, it was an act of respecting his God, who I think was the... There's three main gods in Hinduism. I think it was the god of Shiva, or Shiva, I don't know how you say it. But he, 45 years.
Perhaps his teacher asked a question.
Maybe. Or maybe he's still waiting to give his answer. No one's said, yes, you can answer now. I know. See, some people, well, this person, maybe not that many people do this. Apparently others, it did encourage others into the faith, apparently, and then others were doing it for a long time, but... Nobody quite as long as this man. This whole sense of his devotion of I want to give my body to it. Now, we might think that's a bit weird, but actually Paul was onto something with this. Because not only does he urge all of us, brothers and sisters, to, in view of God's mercy, because of all that God has done for us, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. You see, actually holding your arm up in the air for 45 years kind of stops you from living to some extent in the way that we might want to. That's why Paul is saying, actually, become a living sacrifice. And it's a choice that we make. It's a decision. And the truth is, we can't, like the boxers, bluff our way through it. We can't, like, say to God, well, yeah. Or actually say to our church, yeah, we're living the life. But we're not really. We can't bluff it, we can't pretend, because actually we'll be found out. Paul says it's a choice, it's a decision. Give yourselves to God. And actually, if we do that, we're always choosing the right box. Living sacrifice. We don't really like the word sacrifice. We like the word living, but the word sacrifice is a bit more tricky. Torah law required that the Jews followed quite an obscure and complex system of animal sacrifice as a way of atoning for their sins. You can read about it in Leviticus chapter 23, and one of the requirements was that an animal that was being sacrificed had to be without blemish, and often the sacrifice was the best that they had. Certainly for the Jewish community, they would have understood that. Actually, Paul was writing to Gentiles in Rome who would have understood sacrifice but never once felt it was required of them. Jesus himself was a sacrifice for the whole world, where he took on the sins of the whole world. And we read that he was led like a lamb to the slaughter. He was the perfect sacrifice. And so Paul is using this understanding of Jewish sacrificial law and the understanding of what Jesus had done for us on the cross. And he says, Well, now for us as Christians, we need to be a living sacrifice. That means we are alive for him and we live for him. That all that we are in our life belongs to him, and that's the sacrifice part. Because it means that actually sometimes we choose not to, well, all the time, we choose not to go our way, but his way. And that's the sacrifice, that what it means to be a Christian is to live his way, not our own way. And that can be quite hard. That can be tough. No one ever said the Christian message was simple. But Paul says, I urge you to live like this. Look at all that God has done for us. Brothers and sisters, offer your bodies, all of who you are, as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing. The word holy means set apart. It means not really being the same as the world's standards. The Bible tells us that we are holy because God is holy, and God comes to live in us. And when we're set apart for him, it pleases God. It pleases God. And Paul tells us that this is true and proper worship. This is what it means to worship God. And it's great to sing songs, to play music. These are great expressions of worship. I encourage it, or more of it. But we all know, don't we, that our worship is much deeper than that. Because our worship is about the way that we live. The true and proper way of being holy and pleasing to God. And that's verse 1. So much in it. I could have unpacked way more, but I know we don't have the time to. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And then in verse 2, it says this. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, his pleasing and perfect will. You see, it's really easy to get sucked in to living the way the world expects us to live. And by the world, I mean that is our circle, our community, the culture of our nation, isn't it? The world's way of thinking, the world's way of acting, the world's way of being, often, not always, but often, is different to the way of God's way for us. And it's easy to get sucked into it. It's easy to conform. Because actually, if you want to live a life which doesn't really have any conflict, it's easier just to go along with the way things are. But actually, Paul encourages us to do the opposite. To not allow culture to shape us into a certain way of thinking or speaking, but to speak up for yourselves. And instead, he uses this word to be transformed. And it starts with what's happening in our head, in our minds, and in our thoughts. Often we can think about life is more about how do I feel. We might wake up and think, well, how do I feel today? And that kind of seems to be the guiding thing in the way that we live. How do I feel about my wife today? How do I feel about that preacher this morning? You know, how do I, if we live our lives completely on feelings, we're not really being transformed. But the other side is true as well. If we live our life only on the doing side, some people think, oh, I have to be doing something in order to be living. If we live on that side of things as well, you know, oh, look, give me 5 points for successful life, or how to be good in 3 easy steps, and I'll follow them, in, you know, perfectly. You can't live like that either. To be transformed means to know, knowing who and what the truth is, and choosing to follow his word. The ancient Greek word for transformed is the word metamorpho, which describes a metamorphosis, this idea of something going from one thing and changing completely into another. And that's what happens when we become Christians. It's different. Christians have described it in different ways. It's like going from darkness to light. It's like going from a sinner to being holy. It's going about from life being all about ourselves to being all about him. It's hard to explain unless you've experienced that transforming power of God in your life.
Amen.
And for some of us, it might not be quite as dramatic. For some of us, we might look at our life and think it wasn't like I was suddenly this and suddenly like this. It was like this gradual progression into it. And that's okay. Obviously, that's okay. That's great. But there are others where the change is so distinctive. And Paul was one of those people. I mean, he used to persecute Christians. And suddenly his life was transformed. It was like he was this. And then he had this encounter with Jesus. And the next day he was like this. So you can understand why Paul's using this language. And when this change takes place, when we give ourselves to Jesus, we begin to know what God's will is. And his will, Paul states it, his will for us and for every human is good, it's pleasing, and it's perfect. How amazing is that? When life feels like it's too hard or difficult or anxious or we're worrying, comfort ourselves in this thought that God's will for us is good and pleasing and perfect. And he doesn't leave us in that state where things are so difficult that we can't cope. He walks and journeys with us because his will is good and pleasing and perfect. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is good, pleasing, and perfect will. Thank God that he has given us his spirit in order to help us with these things. He's given us each other as church to help us with these things. I know this morning perhaps haven't said anything new, but I hope it's been a helpful reminder. A reminder of how God sees us. And it's a challenge for us to offer ourselves to him, to be that living sacrifice. Just pause just for a moment before Di comes and leads us in our closing song. Perhaps today, for some of us here, we need to say, God, I've been living, but I haven't been a sacrifice. And maybe we need to renew that before God this morning. Maybe some of us here what I understand even more what it means to be transformed by God. I encourage you, I urge you to ask God that, to ask God to transform you.